Welcome back to the Physician's Guide to Doctoring. On this week's episode, we have a guest host. So please be the same respectful audience you are for me and enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Heidi. Imagine kicking back while a HIPAA-compliant AI scribe writes your SOAP notes for free. Yes, you heard us right. Heidi is free. I'm Dr. Tom, Heidi's CEO and founder, and we started Heidi to stop clinicians wasting their life on clinical documentation. Heidi transforms your consult babble into crisp, clear SOAP notes, personalizing itself with every edit. One day, Heidi will be your AI resident, looking through research, explaining plans, and doing anything you don't want to. If you currently pay for an AI scribe in your practice, you should swap to Heidi. We'll even credit you for anything you've already paid. Dive into the description for the link and make your practice the envy of every stethoscope in town. Sign up and watch Heidi work its magic all for free because you've got better things to do.
In today's episode, Dr. David Graham is joining me to discuss how much is enough. Dr. Graham is a retired internal medicine doctor and currently a financial planner and a financial coach. And he's in the first few years of his retirement for medicine. So he has a ton of great information to add, and I'm excited and hope you enjoy the episode as much as I did recording it.
Hey, this is Brad Block, host of The Physician's Guide to Doctoring. This is a personal and professional development podcast for physicians where we have experts on the show that try to teach us everything we should have been learning while we were memorizing Krebs cycle.
All right. Good day, and thank you for joining us. This is Dr. Colbin Solberg. Joining us today is Dr. David Graham, a retired infectious disease doctor. David's been in the finance space since 2018, writes an incredible blog, FI Physician, has been doing planning and coaching with physicians now for over 6 years. And I don't know if David knows as much, but he was responsible for helping me get into this mess as well. I reached out to him many years ago just for understanding of how to get registered and be able to do financial planning. And you were wonderful at that time. So I'm glad that we've reconnected these many years later. So welcome.
I apologize in advance, I guess, behind.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, we've talked offline a little bit in the last couple months. And, you know, a topic that we thought would be pretty germane for physicians was what is enough? And we can take that wherever you want to go, David, if you want to sort of talk about financial stuff and money, if you want to talk about work and how much time you're spending at work. I think your viewpoint, especially since you've retired and what that's looked like for you, would be valuable. So what's enough?
Love it. And, you know, in the frame of early retirement, it's very, very important to think about because there's the one more year syndrome, right? One more year, one more year, one more year. How much is enough? And then when you retire, it's almost not primarily a financial decision, ironically. You know, what is enough prestige? What is enough operating room time and the fulfillment and joy and gratification you get from helping people as a physician? So I like to start thinking about enough from the opposite of, you know, what is enough. Like oftentimes when you retire, you're faced with this scarcity, right? This lack, because you're used to money coming in every month. You're used to money, you know, hitting your bank account twice a week, and you almost don't know what to do with all that cash coming in as a physician. But once that money stops hitting your bank account, there really is this rush of scarcity and this almost fear you have of running out. Folks that invest in real estate, they, you know, think the opposite of scarcity is abundance. And it really isn't. The opposite of scarcity is enough. And knowing what enough is, how much is enough. And personally for myself, you know, am I enough? Is it okay to not be a physician anymore? And it's a tough decision that we all have to deal with when we retire, let alone retire early.
Well, you went deep quick there, David.
Well, thanks.
You know, it's interesting you say that because I have a really dear friend who she retired at 50 from anesthesia, and I reached out to her maybe 6 months ago just to, you know, to start this process. And I'm right in the middle of all the things that you mentioned, the one more year syndrome, the am I enough? And she said that, you know, the thing to really start planning for is who are you when you're not a physician? And she had a unique viewpoint as a female physician too, which was very interesting. But She's like, that goes away quick. That prestige and that importance in your own mind disappears overnight. She didn't struggle with it that much, but I can see where a lot of people would struggle with that. And, you know, in your work with physicians, how much of these sorts of things are you bringing up when you're working with them and doing planning and coaching?
Well, I mean, an exuberant amount of it, because honestly, I don't deal with people that haven't oversaved for retirement. So, you know, by definition, the folks that I deal with are in the 98th, 99th percentile for money in retirement. And so when you're thinking, is that enough? You know, that is something that they all have to deal with, you know, let alone the loss of prestige, loss of status. So, you know, my experience with that is, especially with proceduralists, if someone is really getting a lot of meaning and fulfillment and flow from being in the operating room, from being in actual clinical procedures, it's really difficult to find that outside of medicine, as opposed to us, you know, intellectual specialists who, you know, will be replaced by AI any minute anyway, right? So it doesn't really matter what we do.
Yeah. As I've been thinking about this over the last week or so, you know, what keeps coming up for me, I think it's really important that for each of us individually, we figure out what is enough, because what it seems like, if you don't answer that question for yourself, the easy answer that we default to is more, right? And that's more years at work. That's, you know, early in your career, that can just be taking on more hours and more call and, you know, more and more and more and more without ever trying to figure out what we're trying to actually accomplish. And then you get to this point where life has passed you by and you didn't even realize it. And so I think especially as physicians, where all of us are very good at just putting our heads down and doing the work that needs to get done and seeing one more patient, doing one more OR case, it's very easy to just keep doing more unless you get off that treadmill. And that's hard to do.
The answer to how much is enough is always just a little bit more. I mean, we know that from salary and, you know, expectations of happiness. If your neighbor is making just a little bit more than you, then you're not going to be happy. It doesn't matter how much you make. It matters how much you're comparing yourself to makes, right? So fundamentally, some people have to realize that there is no number out there for them that will make them comfortable. You know, for instance, I had a client a year or two ago who had made $10 million in real estate. And, you know, he had a liquidity event. And my advice, of course, was to take a third of that and put it aside in something safer, you know, say stocks or bonds, which was abhorrent to him because he was a real estate guy. But he couldn't do that. He's like, no, I can't just make 8% with this money. I need to make more, you know. So he actually took a lot of risk that was unnecessary. Instead of taking, you know, a diversified path where you put your eggs in different baskets, you know, I've got my stocks and bonds, I've got my real estate, I've got my business over here. He could have very easily done a third with his assets and become very well diversified and frankly had enough at that point. But because he kept taking, you know, 10 out of 10 risk with these investments, it's not enough. It's not a nest egg at that point. So some people, a number will never be enough for them, in which case they really don't understand that the opposite of scarcity is abundance. It's not more.
It's enough. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting you say that, because there is a piece probably within the last month in the Wall Street Journal, and they looked at income from 25,000 to 250,000 and asked what would be enough. And across the spectrum, for every income, it was about two times more, right? Didn't matter what you were making, that ratio kind of held. And it's interesting. Both of us, you know, I was thinking, both of us know Jim Daly at White Coat. And one of his themes that runs throughout his writing since he's began is, once you have won the game, stop playing. Like, you don't need to play anymore. Like, once you have won, stop taking that risk. It's dumb.
Well, I have a funny story about that very topic, because that's actually William Bernstein's quote. Once you have enough money, stop playing. Once you won the game, stop playing with the money. And I had him add, you know, with the money that you need. So like William Bernstein, he's in his 70s and he just set up a 30-year tips ladder because he wanted to make sure that he had, you know, enough. But that said, you know, his asset allocation is probably less than 50-50, and he's very well overfunded. So even Bill Bernstein couldn't stop playing. He can't even play with the money he doesn't need at that point. So he had more than enough, but still, he got a 30-year tips ladder at the age of 70. So that's not normal planning for most folk, you know, and that's fine too. Once you have oversaved for retirement and your withdrawal rate is less than 1%, you know, it doesn't matter at that point what your asset allocation is, right?
No, it doesn't at all. So why do you think we struggle with that so much? Because, you know, we talk about this as if it's benign, but it's actually not. It's when you really think of what it means is you've wasted all this time working and saving too much when you could have been doing other things. So it's not, and it's, I think part of it is hard to know what the consequences of that behavior is, right? Like it's not a short feedback loop, right? So it reminds me of medical school where I was perfectly content to get an 80 and know that I passed. I didn't need to get a 99. I felt like I studied too much and wasn't skiing enough. So why do we struggle with it so much?
Boy, the anesthesiologist that gets an 80, I don't know if I want you passing gas on me, my friend. So, and I'm sure you had just a stellar clinical career, you know, as a result of that, or, you know, in despite of that. So another anecdote, another friend I have who continues working in his 70s, you know, he's got a nice nest egg and he knows that he says to himself, well, I can go and work a couple hours and that'll pay for this vacation. But, you know, ultimately he's going to leave all this money to the library. So I tell him every time, you're not working for a vacation, you're working for the library. Every time you go in there and put yourself, you know, at risk of some adverse clinical event, remember that this money doesn't affect you at all. And it's Bill Perkins' book. Is it Die Broke or Die With Nothing?
Die With Zero.
Die With Zero. Thank you. There's a couple different iterations of it. But, you know, honestly, the first time I read it didn't strike me. But my second read more recently, you really understand that every hour you spend working for money that you're never going to use, that probably your kids will never use, it is a wasted hour. Now, the caveat is we're helping people. We are, you know, reducing suffering and we do have a wonderful opportunity to go and help people. But every hour that you're working that you don't need to is an hour that you can't go bike riding with your wife, right? That you can't play with your kids. So why is it so hard to figure out what enough is? I think for physicians, because it is a hard stop a lot of times, right? I don't practice for 6 months and I'm never practicing again. It's not like I can go and get back this job again. But that said, you know, especially if we're talking about people that retire early, none of us go to the beach and drink Mai Tais, right? We're all being productive in our lives, you know. Is it productive to volunteer? Is it productive to be with your kids or grandkids? Is it productive to, I mean, I like going to the gym for 2 hours a day. Is that not a productive thing to do? I mean, I think that we just have to understand that what we want out of life is not going to wait for us. You know, it's going to happen today or it's never going to happen again. You never get today back again, right?
And well, and today is all we have.
That's right. Live in the moment.
What I keep wondering is part of the challenge that we face as physicians, and this I think this would apply for lawyers or, you know, high-powered executives. We've kind of forgot the things that bring satisfaction and joy and our hobbies and all, like, because we spend so much damn time in the hospital or the clinic, we've let those other strands of our lives wither on the vine, so to speak. And it gets to this point where you think of walking away and you're like, what, like, where do I spend this time? And it seems,
who am I anymore? And I, you know, I got into medical school out of high school. I was one of them 7-year pre-med people. So literally when I quit, when I was 48, I had this sliding door moment where, you know, here I was 18 again. I went and took this train and I got onto medical school and I missed birthdays and I missed Christmas and I missed weddings and I missed friends and I missed experiences, right? Well, here I am at 48, 30 years later, I have a chance to get on another train, right? I have a chance essentially to relive my life again. I have another, you know, perhaps 50 years worth of my life with which to rediscover who I am, which you know, often goes back to the things that we enjoyed when we were 4 or 6 years of age, right? What did we used to do when we played? I mean, and when was the last time we played?
In the world of medicine, where every decision can change lives, your peace of mind is crucial. This is where Pattern steps in. Imagine insurance made simple, fast, and personalized just for you. With Pattern, you're not just getting disability and life insurance, you're insuring your future and protecting your greatest asset, your income. In the past 10 years, Pattern has transformed the way over 20,000 doctors secure their financial well-being. Discover the simplicity of securing your future at patternlife.com or click the link in the description.
No, I mean, I love that. It really does bring a smile to my face. We've talked, I have a 2.5-year-old and it's so wonderful just to watch him explore the world and skip around, you know, and read books. And it's simple. It doesn't take a whole lot.
Yeah. I reflect on the best thing that's ever happened to me happened last week in the sunshine on the hill. I had my 3 kids rolling on top of me, all laughing and giggling and wrestling. And you know, that's something that if I don't do that when they're 5, 5, and 9, I'm not going to have the chance to do that with them.
Yeah. I mean, what you're doing right now, putting in that time, like all they want from you right now is presence. And that's really powerful. So David, do you mind talking about like how, you know, knowing that you're in the first couple of years of stepping away from medicine, can you talk about some of the things that have been surprising, some of the challenges you faced? And, you know, and also I think it would be helpful for our listeners to hear, like, who do you turn to and where have you found support as you've navigated this? Because, I think when we read a lot of the writing and the blogs and, you know, it's just a snippet. And, I think a lot of people skip over the really hard stuff and the hard parts not just the identity piece, but where to find support in that community when all the people that you used to hang out with at work are still working and you're going to the gym.
Yeah. So to kind of start with the general retirement advice, the idea is you have to find a way to replace in your retirement life everything that work was giving you, right? So work was giving you hours. It was giving you socialization. It was giving you lunch plans. It was giving you dinners out with the drug reps. How exciting is that? So all of these things, 8 hours a day, something to do for lunch, people, right? Every single thing that work was giving you, you have to find a way to replace in retirement. And that is the full-time job of retirement, okay? So it really does give you the ability to step back and work on your health, because how many of us have become a little bit chubby and have lost a little bit around the edges while we're working 10, 12 hours a day. So, fundamentally your first job is to take care of your health. And that is not only physical health, that's emotional health too. So medicine is such a shame-based culture, such a toxic culture that it takes a while. You know, people actually, if they come into the hospital and see how we interact with each other, they're shocked that, wait, why do you talk to people that way? I don't know. That's how we were taught, right? That's how we've always done it. So it is such a toxic culture that honestly, most of us need some emotional slash, well, let's just call it mindfulness to rehabilitate ourselves from being doctors.
To be human again, yeah.
So, I mean, for me, I lost 60 pounds.
You look great. You look fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah, it literally was. I mean, I lost 60 pounds. That's where I had let myself go at the end of my career. I read 400 books. I'm working on meditation. I'm not so good at it, but there are other mindfulness practices that have really, I hope, allowed me to rewire some circuits in my brain that got me away from being Dr. Asshole all the time, right? Because we're so triggered at work that the immediate reaction is often maladaptive in the real world, right? Because we're no longer captains of our ship when we retire. We're no longer a physician. We lost that identity. So actually mindfulness and rewiring some of these old synapses that are reactionary. Our fight or flight gets stimulated and we go down pathways that are not useful in retirement. They're not useful in the hospital either, but we don't know that there's an alternative. So, and then the next thing is, so filling up all of those things that work misses, job number one is your health, physical and emotional, and then iterating, trying new things. I mean, I walk dogs. I volunteered at the Red Cross. I've done about 8 different things that have been, you know, so-so, hit or miss. And then, you know, finally, my friends are not my age. My friends are in their 70s and 80s predominantly at this point, because that's who's available, right?
So a couple of things. I mean, actually, that seems kind of neat. It's, you know, like there's almost, it's almost like they're mentoring you on how to do this, right? And I think, have you read David Brooks' The Second Mountain?
I actually finished that about a month ago. Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, it's an interesting concept. And, you know, thinking about, you know, the first phase of our life, which is very familiar for anyone who's a physician, right? Like all the accolades and success and the financial things, accomplishment, right? And, but then you move into the second phase of, you know, I think he talks a lot about eulogy virtues, right? Kindness and compassion and caring for your community and volunteering and the things that actually make you a good human being. It's a chance to learn how to do that again that we just haven't had for the last 15 or 20 years. And so, you know, it seems the sooner you can get on that path, the happier you'll be. And it's, there's 2 books that go together. The other one that makes me think of this, David, is From Strength to Strength by Arthur Brooks, which talks about, you know, it's sort of a similar thing. I think they, you know, they talk about the sooner you get from the accomplishment to, you know, it's almost like giving back, the better you'll be. How did you learn to iterate? Because I think one of the things, at least speaking for myself, but I think physicians in general, there's this fear that I don't want to try new things if I'm going to be terrible at them. For the longest time, I want to learn how to surf. I want to go to Costa Rica and surf, but I need to be a Kelly Slater off the, you know, right off the bat, or else it's not going to be fun, which seems stupid, but.
Yeah. I mean, you just got to keep getting in the arena. You got to keep throwing your hat in the ring. Like for instance, I grassroots canvassed for a political candidate just because I hate knocking on doors. Like I don't want to go and knock on someone's door on a Sunday. So I did this for that express reason, right? So, I mean, how do you try new things? I literally got to the point where I got out a whole bunch of pictures from when I was, you know, 5 to 10. And I looked at a lot of my childhood pictures and I tried to, what was I doing in those pictures? You know, what did I look like I was having fun doing these things? And I actually asked my mom to list the activities I enjoyed doing from 0 to 5, 5 to 10. So I went whole hog on trying to rediscover the true inner sense of purpose, playful being, you know, little Davy, so that I could try to bring him back. And listen, I'm swinging and missing a lot. I've tried a lot of things that I haven't wound up enjoying. But one thing I got, Coben, I got time. You know, I got a lot of time on my hands.
Well, the thing that I love about your story is there. I mean, you do get the sense of that childhood playfulness, which I think is super fun. And your curiosity is really coming through, right? Like, I'm going to see if I like this. We're going to try it. We'll ask questions and we'll see. And, you know, you can tell that there's not necessarily a predetermined outcome in your mind and you're just going to go with it, which is, I mean, it is. It's like that playfulness of childhood. I think that's great.
Yeah. And then the skill of a child is that they are able to live in the moment, right? They are able to find what smells good, what looks good, what is interesting to them anywhere they are, right? You know, digging in the dirt, eating worms is a afternoon of pure joy and delight for kids, you know? Why not?
Yeah, it doesn't take much. How do you think you're doing right now? Or how are you on your journey to find your purpose?
I'm failing, but I expect that it is a journey, right? It's not that I'm going to come across something and say, this is it. I have, you know, reached the peak of the second mountain. I'm done. The truth is about that second mountain is that you never reach the top of it, right? You're always growing. You know, this growth mindset has to follow you, and we will never reach our true purpose and meaning because it's always there inside of you. And it's not on the outside. You know what? You can't find it in this world. It's inside you already.
Well, it's almost as if what you're doing is stripping away all those different layers, right? Like all those identities that we took on, the physician, you know, someone who's financially well-to-do, and you're stripping all that away to really get at your core.
Yeah. And I mean, I threw away 90% of the clothes I had. I threw away 90% of possessions I had. It is a process of revealing, of removing. You know, the statue is inside the rock. You have to find it by removing, not by adding crap to it.
Well, one thing that comes up for me, and I bet for a lot of our listeners as well, you know, for much of our professional lives, we always knew what the next, you know, let's say 3 to 5 years look like, right? Like whether at whatever point you were in school, at whatever point you were in training, you kind of knew how that path looked. Can you speak a little bit, you know, like what you're doing now is just, what I take away from it, David, is all you're doing is looking at the very next step, and you're not sure where it's going to take you, and you're not sure how it's going to turn out. But you seem pretty darn comfortable just taking that next step. But it seems like a big shift in mindset.
Yeah. So, because you hear about the idea of retirement that I had 6 months or 2 years of activity planned, and I did all that. I blew through all of that. And now here I am at the other side of it, and I don't know what to do. So, I honestly try not to plan too far ahead. And, you know, I'll admit I'm an introvert, so I don't need to be out there among people a lot, but you figure it out. Like if I don't have a walk scheduled 3 times a week with a buddy, I get a little antsy, right? If I don't have a lunch scheduled or a coffee. So there are certain things that you do figure out along the way, but you know, the path is made by walking, right? The path isn't there. It's made when you walk it.
Yeah. But it's a little bit terrifying, but I think it's also wonderful. Well, this has been a great conversation. One thing I always like to ask guests, what's one of your favorite books you recommend and why?
Well, since I quoted Brené Brown, that's actually her quote, the opposite of scarcity is enough. I'll go ahead and go with her Gifts of Imperfection, because I think there is a lot of hidden shame in physicians. If not, that's why we become a doctor in the first place, that it's a shaming culture, we're pimped. And it really does help to realize that we are not alone. Like, so fundamentally, and I'm not sure if many people have figured this out yet, but this voice in our head that's constantly going, that's not who we are, right? That voice is not who we are. And it takes some time and mindfulness to actually separate yourself and actually hear the voice. And a lot of us beat the hell out of ourselves if we make a mistake. We're just so critical. We're so demeaning to ourselves. And if I could tell anything to physicians, is that it's okay. We're all like that. We all have these feelings. We all have this component of shame and this really vicious inner voice that if we can get some distance from and learn to appreciate, if not even laugh at, we can be a lot better adjusted and more emotionally intelligent.
Well, I love that you finished just as deep as you started, because it is pretty powerful. And I would, you know, I think if anything's changed for me in the last couple of years that's made the biggest difference, it's a consistent mindfulness practice. I finally, for whatever reason, finally found something that stuck. And I can tell when I sort of get off that track, and it's amazing what a difference it makes for something that seems so small and, you know,
Well, and there's real data for it too. So, you know, if we're going to talk to people about sleeping well and eating well, we have to tell them about mindfulness. It is just as important as every other leg of the stool of wellness.
Well, I love this. Well, I think we're going to have to talk again a little bit more and go into this whole realm, because I think there's a lot that we could get into. So I appreciate your time today.
Love it. Thank you.
Thanks again from Heidi. Elevate your practice with a free AI scribe, zero cost, HIPAA compliant, and time saving. Ready to swap? We've got you covered for past AI scribe expenses. Head to HeidiHealth.com, get started, and make your practice the envy of every stethoscope in town.
Thanks for listening. I have a favor to ask. You listened to the episode until the end, which means you either fell asleep or you really liked the episode. So please share it or like it or comment on a social media post or write us a 5-star review, something. It would really help me out. And maybe what you learned from this episode can help someone else too. The views expressed in this episode are those of the interviewer and interviewee and don't represent the views of their employer or even their significant other. Even though the magic of podcasting make it sound like I'm talking directly to you. This is not a doctor-patient relationship, and this is not medical advice or financial advice or really any advice. Thank us again for listening to The Physician's Guide to Doctoring.